I'll come back to the text in a minute. But first, Patrick is by far my favorite of the early church fathers and mothers. I love Patrick's story, Patrick's writings, the kind of faith Patrick embodied is so robust and earthy and connected and inclusive. And I want to talk a little bit about him today, since it's not every year you get to have church on St. Patrick's Day. This is the anniversary of his death, which we know. We don't know what year he was born, but what we do know is that when he was 16 years old, he was kidnapped by Irish pirates. He is, believe it or not, St. Patrick, this will blow your mind, is not Irish. What? He was English. He was from England. His parents were actually probably fairly wealthy and important under the Roman system. At the time, Rome had dominion over England, and Patrick was living there and was kidnapped at 16 years old by Irish pirates and was taken to live in a little tiny town on the far western side of Ireland, away from England, where he was forced to be a shepherd for a chieftain. And again, heard me talk about this before. Being a shepherd is much more romantic in our modern worldview than it was at the time. Being a shepherd meant you were out living with the sheep. And I don't know if you've been to Ireland, but it's cold and rainy and wet a lot. And being a shepherd meant being cold and wet and lonely a lot. And Patrick says that he did not have much interest in God at all before he was kidnapped. Growing up in a privileged home in a well-to-do neighborhood, he was just fine. He had his life and enjoyed it and didn't need much of God. But he found, through being kidnapped and being forced to spend all of this time with nobody but the sheep, alone and in the dark and cold, he found his thoughts starting to turn towards God. And he said, it was during this time that I found myself starting to pray 100 times a day, as many at night. He said, I began to feel God's spirit and presence with me for the first time in the middle of what would be considered the worst thing he had ever gone through, right? I mean, nobody wants to get kidnapped and be forced to be out in the cold and rain and alone and away from your family and you know, the lowest person on the totem pole in the society you're in. But he said, I found the love and fear of God more and more inflamed in my heart. My faith enlarged, my spirit augmented. So that I said 100 prayers by day and almost as many by night. I arose before day in the snow and the frost and in the rain, and yet I received no harm, nor was I affected with slothfulness, for then the Spirit of God was warm within me. Pretty amazing, right? The place he encounters God is not in a church, but in the darkest period of his life that he goes through. He has a dream not long after that, telling him that his hungers would be rewarded and that his ship was ready, that he could go home. So he just leaves at that point. One of the things about being a shepherd is that there's no one there to tell you you can't run off. So he takes off, as long as they don't catch you. And treks 200 miles with no provisions across Ireland to the eastern shore, where he attempts to board a ship without a ticket or without any money. And of course, the captain denies him, but he goes and prays and then miraculously is allowed onto the ship. And they sail back to England, and he gets to go back home after 6 years of being separated from his family. It's a cool story. Of course, what happens after that, I think, is what makes it even more amazing and inspiring, is that Patrick has another dream. And in this dream, he sees the people of Ireland calling for him to come back to them, to come and share the love of God that he has experienced with them. So he leaves his home again, and this time he goes to France, to Auxerre, where he studies and actually becomes a bishop, and then leaves France and goes back to Ireland to spend the rest of his life living with and serving these people who caused him so much harm. And this is why Patrick is one of my favorite. Also, the way he talks about it. He returns to Ireland. He knows the people. He knows the language. He knows the culture. Things that he would not have if this awful stuff that had happened to him had not happened, he would not be in the position to share God's love with them at all. But because of this darkness he has gone through, he is able to come back and bring incredible light. Literally. The amazing confrontation. This is so, like, so cool. There was the king of Tara, the main king in Ireland. Every fall they would have a bonfire, and no bonfires were allowed to be lit until the king lit his bonfire on his hill. Part of this pagan ritual. So Patrick goes to the hill of Slane, right across from the hill where the king is lighting his bonfire, and lights a bonfire first. I see your law, and I will break it. He then, praying, marches right through the guards who are come to put out. Well, the guards come to put out his bonfire, and they can't. Another really cool thing, miraculous thing. And Patrick marches through them straight to the king and convinces the king to follow God. He said, "We have a better God. Let me tell you about our God, the God." It's this wonderful and incredible, courageous story of light coming forth from darkness. Of course, Ireland almost entirely converts to Christianity. And it is one of the healthiest and least institutional, beautiful forms of Christianity the world has ever seen. Patrick includes slaves. He includes women. Everyone in the Celtic Christianity is just this amazing. If you haven't read or studied it, it's a wonderful, beautiful thing how inclusive and how deeply respectful the Celtic Christianity was of the gifts of God made manifest in every single person. Because, of course, Patrick knows what it was like to be on the bottom. He was a slave. He got that God was working through those people just as much as kings and princes. This Abraham story that we started with has some similar parallels. God shows up to Abraham and promises him good. But that is not what Abraham is experiencing, right? I mean, Abraham says, well, God, your blessings are nice, but I don't have an heir. I don't have someone to pass this on to. And I'm old, and in the middle of this, there doesn't seem a way for these blessings to actually matter. And then the story gets even a little stranger, right? It says that Abraham experienced, as the sun goes down, Abraham experiences a deep sleep, and deep and terrifying darkness descend on him. And this is where God shows up. This is often not what we think about our lives. We try to avoid anything terrifying. No thank you. But Abraham encounters God precisely at a point that is incredibly disorienting. Darkness is where we don't really see what things are for what they are. It's where it's confusing and often terrifying. And this is where God shows up. By the way, the cutting the animals in two, this was the practice of covenant in the ancient Middle East. What they would, when you made a covenant with someone else, you would cut the animals in half and say, "May it be done to me if I break this covenant." So Abraham does this, and God shows up, and it is in this deepest darkness that God makes a covenant and connects with Abraham and says, "You are, I'm going to bless beyond your wildest dreams. That your descendants are going to be like the stars in the sky." Even though this is not what Abraham's experiencing right now, right? He doesn't even have one kid to point to. Oh, this kid's going to have, no. Like, in the middle of this uncertainty, darkness, and fear, God shows up and blesses Abraham, establishes a relationship with him that will never end. Abraham believes. Trusts. And this is credited to him as righteousness. By the way, the first line that God says to Abraham in Genesis 15, "Do not be afraid, Abraham, I am your shield." Shield is something you trust in to protect you from the evil, from the attacks, from the things that are out to get you. What is your shield? What do you trust in to protect you from the harm, the darkness, the attacks, the uncertainty? The passage in Luke, I love the start of this. At that time, some Pharisees said to Jesus, "Get away from here if you want to live. Herod Antipas wants to kill you." Again, Herod is the most powerful person around, has the most soldiers. No one can tell Herod, except Caesar, who's not present, no. So if Herod wants to kill you, what can Herod do just fine? Kill you. You can't say no, it's not fair. I'm sorry, I'm king. Die. The Pharisees tell Jesus to get away, to run. If you value your life, go. And what does Jesus say? Go tell that fox, "I will keep on casting out demons and healing people today and tomorrow, and the third day I will accomplish my purpose." Jesus does not respond in fear, even to someone who has incredible power. I love this. There's also this wonderful allusion to something else, right? I'm going to keep doing this today and tomorrow. And the third day. What happens on the third day? Resurrection. This is such a profound statement of trust, of courage in the face of evil and darkness and attack. It is a confession that death does not get the last word. Right? I'm going to keep doing what I am called to do, and on the third day, nothing can stop resurrection. This is powerful. There's some heartbreak here too, because Jesus is looking at Jerusalem as where else would I be killed? Don't worry. Jesus, just like Patrick, does not run away from the darkness. He is willing to descend, to come down here, to leave heaven and become one with us, in spite of the fact that this is going to involve some darkness, some confusion, and some pain. Because he is not afraid of death. He has a bigger shield. Something to trust in and to protect him that is far stronger than anything Herod can throw. In fact, the picture of God Jesus puts forth here is a profound one. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones God's messengers, how often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings. What picture of God do we see here? As a mother, shielding, protecting her young. We see that God, more than anything else, deeply desires to be our shield, our comforter, our protector. God, as a mother, you mothers know there's nothing you wouldn't do to protect your young, right? Like, mama grizzly bear is the scariest thing in the woods. Don't mess with that. This is the picture God gives us of God wanting more than anything else to gather us under her wings. Beautiful. What is your shield? What is Jerusalem trusting in? What does Jesus want Jerusalem to trust in? I think sometimes these things we go putting our attention, our hope, and our faith in may look like good things. Our own capacity, our own resources, our own ability to control the world and make it the way we want it, those can be good things, but if those are what we put our ultimate trust in, they may be the very things preventing God from gathering us under God's wings. We need a bigger shield. Because, of course, all of those things will come to an end, right? Anything else, including myself, that I put my trust in has its limits. Money has its limits. My position in society has its limits. My country has its limits. All of the things that we end up putting trust in will fail, but not our God. First and the second day, I will keep on casting out demons and healing people today and tomorrow, and the third day, I will accomplish my purpose. Sunday's coming. When we put our trust in God, we are putting our faith and our trust and our hope in something that can never be shaken. When we decide to let God gather us under God's wings, it is the place where no matter what else happens to us, no matter where we get kidnapped, no matter what darkness we may be experiencing, we can know that in the end we are saved and safe and whole and alive. Lent is a season where we stop and examine ourselves. It's commemorating Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness and 40 days spent without some of the resources we might wish we have. It's a time we may find ourselves walking through, well, it's the symbol of course, all those times in life when we find ourselves walking through wilderness. Times of darkness, discouragement, doubt. Times when life isn't the way we wish it was. These are very good and rich times to ask ourselves what we are putting our trust in. Because more than any other time, that is when it is revealed, right? It's not till you're out there with the sheep in the dark and the snow that you realize you need something more than yourself. This is a good time to ask what we are depending on as our shield, where we are putting our trust. Because this is the time when these are the times when we can learn that we need not fear the darkness, that we need not fear the laws or kings. We need not fear injury or disease. We need not fear even the powers of hell or death itself. Because the third day is coming. Patrick's longest legacy is actually called Patrick's breastplate or shield. It is the prayer and the song that he prayed as he walked through those soldiers towards the king of Tara. I want to end with this today. And I want to end with this shield, this breastplate, as a prayer for myself and a prayer for us and a prayer for you. It is in verses where Patrick starts each one saying, I bind to myself today, and then some aspect of God. That's why it's the shield, because I am taking this and tying myself to this today. I bind to myself today the strong virtue of the invocation of the Trinity. I believe the Trinity in the unity, the creator of creation. I bind to myself today the virtue of the incarnation of Christ with his baptism, the virtue of his crucifixion with his burial, the virtue of his resurrection with his ascension, the virtue of his coming on the judgment day. I bind to myself today the virtue of the love of seraphim, in that obedience of angels, in the hope of resurrection unto reward, in the prayers of patriarchs, in the predictions of prophets, in the preaching of apostles, in the faith of confessors, in the purity of virgins, in the deeds of righteous men, I bind to myself today the power of heaven, the light of the sun, the brightness of the moon, the splendor of fire, the flashing of lightning, the swiftness of the wind, the depth of the sea, the stability of the earth, the compactness of rocks. I bind to myself today God's power to guide me, God's might to uphold me, God's wisdom to teach me, God's eye to watch over me, God's ear to hear me, God's word to give me speech, God's hand to guide me, God's way to lie before me, God's shield to shelter me, God's host to secure me. Against the snares of demons, against the seductions of vices, against the lusts of nature, against everyone who meditates injury to me, whether far or near, whether few or with many, I invoke today all these virtues against every hostile, merciless power which may assail my body and my soul. Against the incantations of false prophets, against the black laws of heathenism, against the false laws of heresy, against the deceits of idolatry, against the spells of witches, smiths, and wizards, against every knowledge that binds the soul of man, Christ, protect me today. Against every poison, against burning, against drowning, against death wound, that I may receive abundant reward. Christ with me. Christ before me, Christ behind me, Christ within me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ at my right, Christ at my left, Christ in the fort, Christ in the chariot seat, Christ in the ship, Christ in the heart of everyone who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone who speaks to me, Christ in every eye that sees me, Christ in every ear that hears me. I bind to myself today the strong virtue of an invocation of the Trinity. I believe the Trinity in the oneness, the Creator of creation. Amen.